Welcome back, everyone, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Please take your seats. We are ready to start the second session of the forum on the challenges and achievements of the implementation of the Millennium Development Goals for women and girls and the road ahead. And the third panel today, already seated on the podium, will discuss a participatory approach to gender equality that champions women's voice, leadership, and rights, and with lessons learned. And I have the pleasure to introduce His Excellency Mr. Paul Seger, permanent representative of Switzerland, who will moderate this panel and introduce its members. The floor is yours, Mr. Ambassador.
Here we go. Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and I look forward to a hopefully very interesting and interactive panel. Excellencies, honorable ministers, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, I now officially warmly welcome you all to the panel called A Participatory Approach to Gender Equality That Champions Women's Voice, Leadership, and Rights, Lessons Learned. And if I may open on a little personal note, when I read that title here, I could very well personally relate to that because I actually practice this participatory approach and gender equality since 27 years in my marriage. We have a clear deal, my wife and I, you know, how we handle this participatory approach and equality. We have said we split decisions evenly. When we agree, we do it my way. When we disagree, we do it her way. So that's a very even kind of approach we have here. Now, being a bit more serious now, after having last year actively participated at this year's, last time participated at this year's CSW meeting in March, and having personally witnessed a huge amount of engagement of UN member states, UN women and civil society, I'm very honored now to serve as the moderator of the preparatory process of the CSW number 58. And I would really like to thank UN women for organizing this stakeholder forum. Having voice and participation in political processes and decisions that determine their lives is a fundamental dimension for women's and girls' human rights and critical for achieving the MDGs for women's and girls. The MDGs have monitored only one aspect of women's participation through an indicator on women's representation in national parliaments. Experience indicates that women's participation in decision-making at all levels, from the global to the local, can influence public policies and spending patterns to improve access to education, healthcare, and decent work, and ensure adequate provision of services and guarantee women's physical integrity and reproductive rights. Amplifying women's voices and participating in household decision-making is also critically important and can have a direct impact on the well-being of women and girls and their families. Achieving the MDGs for women and girls requires accountability systems to enable women to hold decision makers to account and to shape public policy, prevent abuses of their rights, or demand redress where such abuses occur. Key to making accountability system work for women is the strength of women's collective action. Ensuring collaboration and accountability across different branches and levels of government, particularly those responsible for implementing the MDGs, is important for achieving gender equality and women's rights. National machineries for gender equality play a critical role as advocates and catalysts for change and monitor progress to ensure accountability. Coordination and leadership by national machineries for gender equality vis-a-vis all government bodies and collaboration with civil society and other stakeholders strengthen gender equality agenda setting. I suggest that we focus on the following issues and questions during this discussion. One, What actions have states taken to ensure women's participation in designing policies and monitoring the implementation of the MDGs? How are women's organizations involved in setting policy priorities and monitoring gaps? Two, what mechanisms have been put in place to ensure that all public authorities responsible for implementing the MDGs systematically address the concerns of women and girls? How have national machineries for gender equality provided leadership to ensure that gender equality concerns are effectively addressed across the MDGs? And three, what have states done to ensure that women's organizations are able to participate in processes of defining priorities for the post-2015 development agenda and the sustainable development goals? We have a diverse group of panelists that will be able to shed light on these questions. I will ask each of our panelists to make a short presentation of a maximum of 7 minutes. I encourage them to address one or all of the questions I have just raised. In particular, I encourage each panelist to present one concrete result or outcome that you would like to see coming out of the CSW 58, and what your contribution or commitment will be towards achieving that outcome. Following the presentations from the podium, I will open the floor for comments. I have a small group of lead discussants on my list, and time permitting, more participants will be able to comment and contribute. At the end, I will give panelists a brief opportunity to respond to questions and comments. Our first panelist is Her Excellency Madame Clara Makungwa, Minister of Gender, Children and Social Welfare of Malawi, lady sitting here to my right. The minister assumed this post recently, coming back from a long track or record of advocacy for women's equal representation in parliament and other political decision-making structures. I look forward to hearing your views, madam, on how a participatory approach contributes to gender equality and your work with other stakeholders. The floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Executive Director for UN Women, Madame Pumzile Blambo-Kyuka, the Chairperson, Ministers, Your Excellencies present here, ladies and gentlemen, allow me, first of all, to once again congratulate Madame Pumzile for taking this position of Executive Director, and we are very proud of you. Your Excellencies, Chairperson, allow me to give Malawi's position on the issue before us here. As the 2015 Millennium Development Goals deadline draws closer, Malawi is pleased to report that the nation is on track to meeting MDGs 4, 6, 7, and 8. The nation has reported declining rates in child mortality in under 5 children in the last 6 years, as well as the prevalence of HIV and AIDS. Despite climate change challenges, Malawi has also been making considerable efforts to sustain the environment through the newly established Ministry of Environment and Climate Change. Partnerships have also been established. However, Malawi is unlikely to meet MDGs 1, 2, 3, and 5, which all have a gender connotation. According to the Human Development Report 2010, the overall gender inequality index was estimated at 0.76. As of now, the representation of women in politics is at 22%, while in public service decision-making positions is at 24%. You may be aware that Malawi has a female head of state now in the name of Dr. Joyce Banda. And we also have female chief of secretary. We have a female chief justice. We have deputy inspector general of police. We have a female solicitor general, among several other senior positions in government. Chairperson, I'm also pleased to state that Malawi cherishes a participatory and all-inclusive approach to gender equality and women empowerment for the effective attainment of the Millennium Development Goals. Malawi has therefore been supporting the promotion of women and girl child rights to accelerate the social and economic empowerment of women. The advancement in all the professional areas leading to the attainment of gender equality. It is in light of this that the government of Malawi fully supports the presence of a standalone goal on gender equality, women's rights, and women's empowerment in the post-2015 agenda, and also to mainstream gender in all the development goals, targets, and indicators. Chairperson, the conclusive legal and policy environments such as the Constitution of Malawi, which has been enshrined a Bill of Rights in Chapter 4 and embedded the principles of gender equality, the enactment of the Gender Equality Act of 2013 to advance the attainment of the gender-related MDGs targets, the Malawi Growth and Development Strategy 2, which also provides for the promotion of gender mainstreaming and women empowerment, enforcement of deceased estate, wills and inheritance Protection Act 2011, Child Care Protection and Justice Act 22 of 2010, and Prevention of Domestic Violence Act number 5 of 2006, implementation of the National Response to Gender-Based Violence, Gender Equality and Women Empowerment Program, and Decentralization Policy and Program on Increasing Women Participation in Politics and Decision-Making, popularly known as 50-50 campaigns, which have strengthened the country's chances of success in light of the 2014 tripartite elections. At the community level, women are strategically positioned to claim their rightful place in the district development plans as they directly participate in the implementation and monitoring of the plans. At the national level, my ministry, in collaboration with the NGO Gender Coordination Network, is working tirelessly to champion women empowerment programs. Chairperson, the technical working groups track the progress of the MDGs implementation using the Malawi Growth and Development Strategy 2 annual reviews. Gender focal points have been placed in all the government ministries and departments to mainstream gender using the guidelines and standards on gender mainstreaming. My ministry was reviewed in July-September 2013, and the Gender Affairs Department has been strengthened, while the national gender machinery is also being re-examined too. Chairperson, the government of Malawi, with funding from UN Women, conducted a post-2015 development agenda priority setting exercise with girls, youth, and men organizations which promote gender equality through a consultative process at all levels. A total of 150 women, girls, men, boys, were consulted from all walks of life, and a social cash transfer program targeting 28,000 Atrapua households befitting 1.5 million people is being implemented, reaching 28% women and 26% children-headed households, among others. The Gender Equality and Women Empowerment Program is being implemented in 13 districts, targeting 24 of our traditional authorities. I would like to wind up and specify the outcome. So, Chairperson, despite this encouraging picture, the limited popularization of the policy and legal instruments among women, girls, and communities, limited service provision for the survivors of violence, limited access to legal services, inadequate institutional structures and partnerships, limited participatory leadership, transparency and accountability, and limited capacity of the national gender machinery, among others, constrain the progress. In this regard, Malawi has developed the MDGs Acceleration Framework with a focus on the girl child. The girl child should therefore be at the center of the post-2015 development goals and strategies to achieve gender equality and women empowerment. Education of the girl child is the basic foundation of women's empowerment and advancement, effective participation in leadership, and sustainable socioeconomic development. In October this year, Malawi enacted a law on compulsory universal primary education, whose purpose is to ensure that all girls and boys have access to education. Malawi will therefore need sustained technical and financial support to effectively attain the gender equality, women's rights, and women's empowerment at all levels. I thank you all for your attention, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Minister, and thank you also not only focusing on the achievements, which are very impressive, but also on the challenges and the focus. I think the idea to focus on the girl child and education seems a very welcome and a very timely one. I would now like to give the floor to our next panelist, which is Her Excellency Madam Reem Abu Hassan, Minister of Social Development of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. Before assuming this responsibility, Madam Reem Abu Hassan served as Secretary General of the National Council of Family Affairs and established the Human Rights and Family Affairs Directorate in the Ministry of Justice of Jordan. Madam Abu Hassan was also the Vice President of the Jordanian Society of Protecting Victims of Family Violence and is the founding member of the International Women's Forum in Jordan. So, Madam, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I'd like to start by thanking UN Women for convening this important event. I was supposed to speak in Arabic, but I've switched into English since there is no translation. I would like to start with the fact that when we talk about gender equality, women's rights, women empowerment, these are all issues that are and concepts that are entrenched in development plans of all countries, whether developed, developing, or less developed. This is a common issue. All communities share and try to come up with solutions for the issue of inequality. And there are also other common concepts that have been realized to be crucial towards achieving gender equality. When we talk about the rule of law, the transparency procedures to ensure equality, the role of civil society, the importance of having men as well as private sector be involved in achieving equality. The role of religion to be interpreted as compatible to human rights and the needs for communities at modern times. These are all issues that we have discussed over the years and are sort of being realized and considered as vital when we deal with gender equality. Also, the importance of really empowering women within the private sphere in order for the women to have a position in the public sphere also is being realized, as well as the need to really have de facto equality, not just de jure equality. So I'll start with talking about enabling environment. Enabling environment in a country like Jordan, we do not just look at the environment where legislation and procedures and policies are needed to establish or to promote gender equality, but rather also self-empowerment whereby women as well as men need to be given skills and concepts in order for them to pursue the fight for women equality. And therefore, when we talk about the enabling environment in a country like Jordan, and to start with the concept that this session is about, voice, We look at the political process, and in a country like Jordan, the Jordanian woman had the right to vote since the 50s of the last century. And now we have a quota for women for the House of Representatives, 15. So in this year's elections, we had 15 women who won by quota out of a 150 seats House of Representatives, as well as three who won on their own merits. And this is in itself is an argument why quota or affirmative action is needed to ensure that the woman's political voice is heard. In the Senate, or the House of Senate, we have nine women who are appointed by His Majesty the King. As for the executive in the cabinet that I am a part of, we have three women out of 27. The three women have the portfolio of social development, culture and transportation. And I say transportation because it is usually not a portfolio that is given to women, but to men. So the idea that we have a woman holding the portfolio of transportation is also to break another barrier. Jordan had the first female judge in 1996. However, by now, 15% of the Jordanian judiciary are women, and the number I'm talking about is we're talking about around 150 women judges out of 928 judges. And the reason we were able to have such an increase in the number of female judges is the fact that the selection process for judges really was based on merit, transparency, as well as ensuring that the applicants' names are not considered when qualifications are considered. And that's why I refer again to the importance of transparent procedures to ensure equality. As for the voice of the woman in the household, I am a believer that policies and legislation are the way to ensure that women does have a voice in the household. And so in Jordan, the first law on domestic violence was enacted in 2008. There were many amendments to the family law that is based on Islamic Sharia that were introduced in 2010 to ensure that women has a greater voice in family issues. There is also a fund was established by law to support motherhood. And the idea is that instead of the employer bearing the expense of women taking a maternity leave, the national fund was established so that that fund would pay for the maternity leave. In terms of the importance of statistics, I would refer to the fact that in Jordan we had many studies made for pay inequity, and once that was outlined, that there is inequality in pay for work of same value, the procedures and policies were being introduced to overcome that gap. As the private sector has a role to play in terms of increasing the number of women in public shareholding companies where women can all participate in budget appropriation committees. I would like to talk for 1 minute about the issue that we are facing in Jordan regarding the Syrian crisis. There is a number of burdens that the country is facing in terms of hosting the Syrian guests or refugees. We're talking about millions and millions of dollars. So what is being introduced as being a cut in services or the financial crisis is 2008. In Jordan, we have an added-on problem, which is the large burden of of Jordan hosting the Syrian refugees. For example, some of the expenses and, that we're talking about for electricity, there is expenses incurred in $400 million. In water, $385 million. Health sector, $251 million. Education, $216 million. And security is $174 million. So we're talking about an issue of $1.9 billion. That affects Jordanian families. And that in itself would also affect Jordanian women because of the need to share such limited resources. As for the last question, the moderator had asked about an outcome that we can work on. Jordan is committed to the standalone goal and the specific targets integrated into other goals. This is something we support. And an outcome that we think is important for CSW 58 is building resilience of families and women during and post-conflict. And this is an issue where women, Syrian women, are facing because of the crisis of leaving their homes with their children, where fathers, husbands, brothers are left in Syria while the women are residing as refugees in foreign countries, including Jordan. And so, for that purpose, Jordan is committed to build another shelter for battered women in the north of Jordan so that it can actually receive Syrian women who are facing domestic violence. We are proud in Jordan that we won the UN Public Service Award for our official shelter for battered women, and we would like to have another shelter that would cater for the needs of refugees as well as Jordanian women. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Minister, for presenting Jordan's progress. And I have to express on a personal note, I'm very much impressed, you know, by the progress you're still able to make despite of the severe burden the refugee crisis from Syria is lying heavily on your country. Our next panelist, Madam Pavina Hoksunkala, the Minister of Social Development and Human Security of Thailand, is unfortunately unable to join us. But my dear friend and colleague, the PR of Thailand, Mr. Norachit Sinhaseni, he is ready to deliver the speech on our behalf, maybe not in the same nice voice as she does, but nevertheless, we'll be listening very attentively to what you have to say to us, Norachit, so the floor is yours.
Thank you, Paul. Ambassador Seeger, Excellencies, distinguished delegates, with that introduction, I'm very at ease, because no way I can compete with her. She's a younger daughter of a former Miss Universe of Thailand. So. That says it all. Well, I have the honor to deliver this statement on behalf of Her Excellency, Mrs. Pavina Hoksunkala, the Minister of Social Development and Human Security, who very much wanted to be here with you. She has always been a tremendous advocate of women's rights, women victim rights in Thailand, but she's unable to attend. Well, Thailand is a strong supporter of women's rights. We are a member of both the CSW and the UN Women's Executive Board. We therefore look forward to exchanging views and lessons learned on this important issue of participatory approach to gender equality and championing women's voice, leadership, and rights. And we hope today's forum will send a strong signal to the international community that gender equality, women's empowerment, and inclusive governance are essential for the achievement of the MDGs and the post-2015 development agenda. Mr. Chair, for the MDGs to truly benefit women and girls worldwide, they must have the equal opportunities to participate in decision-making in both the public and private spheres. they must be represented in the shaping, implementation, and monitoring of all development processes. Our current women's development plan constitutes our national gender policy, and the plan places high importance on women's participation in decision-making at all levels. Moreover, we have integrated MDG indicators as one of the indicators for monitoring the implementation of our national development plans. And these indicators include, for example, an increase in the proportion of women in politics and public decision-making, poverty reduction, and closing the income gap between women and men. On your second question as to what mechanisms have been put in place, in our case, specific mechanisms to ensure gender mainstreaming and women's needs and priorities have been established. And at the national level, the National Commission on Policy and Strategy for the Improvement of the Status of Women, chaired by the Prime Minister herself, comprises representatives from both government agencies, experts, and most importantly, women's rights advocates. And the Commission recommends to the Cabinet policies on the promotion of women's rights and gender equality. It also facilitates and monitors the implementation of Thailand's commitments under international instruments to which we are party, including the MDGs. At the agency level, all ministries are required to take into account and respond to the specific needs of women and girls. And this is realized through the appointment of chief gender equality officers and gender focal points. At the local level, women development committees with technical and financial support from the government have been initiated and are managing development projects. Apart from such mechanisms, the National Women Assembly, organized annually, brings together women and girls from all walks of life. It reviews progress, identifies challenges, and provides policy recommendations to the government on women's advancement and national development. Finally, some recent initiatives by the government for achieving the MDGs for women and girls. First is the National Women's Development Fund, launched by the Prime Minister in 2011. The fund aims to enhance women's economic opportunities by serving as a revolving fund for women's groups. At the same time, the fund serves as a tool to promote women's leadership and management skills. The fund's purposes are in accordance with MDG Goal 1, eradicate extreme poverty and hunger, and MDG Goal 3, promoting gender equality and empowering women. Approximately 8 million women are now members of the fund and have benefited from it. The second initiative is the One Stop Crisis Center, which was launched in April this year. These centers provide a comprehensive, multi-sectoral, and integrated referral and response system to social problems with a focus on human trafficking, teenage pregnancy, child labor, and domestic violence. Looking ahead to the post-2015 development agenda, we firmly believe that it should continue to place people at its center and should be inclusive in both the process and outcome. Here, let me take the opportunity to thank UN Women and the UN country team in Thailand for organizing in 2013 national consultations on the elaboration of the post-2015 development agenda with 15 marginalized groups, including a focus group dedicated to women's networks. Finally, to Ambassador Seeger's request for suggestions for concrete proposals, let me try to offer a few. First, Thailand supports the continuation of a stand-alone goal for gender equality and the empowerment of women and girls. Second, gender issues and concerns should be highlighted in the post-2015 development agenda, and this includes women with disabilities and elderly women. And third and final point is that ending violence against women and girls must also be fully recognized. I thank you.
Thank you, Norajit. You did just brilliantly. Thank you very much indeed. The next on my list will be Mrs. Valentina Lesgai. She is Member of Parliament and Chair of the Parliamentary Committee on Education and Media of Albania. Ms. Lesgai has been a Member of Parliament of Albania since 2002, that's when we joined the United Nations, and she currently chairs the Parliamentary Committee on Education and Media. Among her priorities, Madam Lesgai advocates for women's increased participation and representation in political decision-making. Madam Lesgai, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Chair, thanks to UN Women for this activity. Let me start directly. And I would say from the beginning that we are reviewing the MDGs in a completely different context, nearly 20 years after Cairo, Beijing, and of course compared to the MDGs. There are changes that have to do with the level of democracy, more open society, with the social media, and of course with the economic situation affected from the crisis. All of that have affected women's situation in different ways, and in particular in countries in transition, as is my country, on, let's say, the new democracies. Coming to my country's situation, I would say from the beginning that the Albania has started the process of adopting and contextualizing the MDGs, encouraging the all stakeholders of the country to track the progress achieving for the MDGs on a regular basis through a national monitoring and evaluation system. What has been achieved? Of course, considerable progress has been made for the legal and policy framework. A national strategy on gender equality is in place based on Beijing program of action. The law for gender equality, approved by the parliament, also it has been an important initiative. These initiatives has been followed by the others, and to complete the legal framework as laws on gender-based violence, on reproductive health rights, on trafficking on human beings, especially on trafficking on women, and of course, gender quota. I can say that the partnership with civil society has been vital for legislative process in my country. I can say it has been vital not only to put them in place, but for the quality of legislation as well. Let me say something about impact of law in gender quota, since women empowerment in politics and decision-making is crucial. In the last elections, number of women MPs is 3 times more compared to the 5 years before. Our new government has 5 ministers compared to one that we had in the past, and I can say that women today are in some sectors that have been male domain in the past. Of course, number of women in senior level is increased. It's doubled, I can say, after we established the quota, because our quota is not only the quota for women in the parliament or in the list, but is a quota that includes the executive body, including the electoral administration, diplomacy, and some other important sectors. As I mentioned today, we have a good set of laws and policies in place. Some of them have real impact on women's lives. Is it enough? Of course not. Especially linking up the women's rights and sustainable development. We are convinced that the issue of gender equality is not just a set of laws and policies, no matter how qualitative they are, and is not a question of numbers as well in the parliament or in the government. Closing the gap in between good laws and policies and the practice remain a challenge, and I say, first of all, for us policymakers. Surely, here stands the role of institutional mechanisms as a key tool in designing and implementing the policies and programs for matters related to the gender equality. However, I believe that the most important step towards gender equality is to use a holistic approach because the challenges are complex and interlinked, I believe. The issue of good governance, the rule of law, and I would like to emphasize the rule of law is very important because we produce good laws but often remain in papers. And corruption, of course, needs to be addressed as they are another barrier for the integration of gender in sustainable development. Let me say that if we currently have a good set of laws and policies that address gender issues, it is first and foremost due to the collaboration with women groups who have pushed and, as I mentioned before, have assisted the legislative process in the Parliament. I believe it's time for a serious participatory debate in the local level on this issue. Today, one famous writer of my country, a candidate for Nobel Prize, for the first time raised the voice about women's violence because of one case that is in the court. Women's issues often are left in the periphery of country debates. It is our obligation to give the voice for these voiceless women. And this cannot be done without media. Media is very strong power. We need to adopt a more inclusive approach involving men, academia, public figures, media, private sector, but we should not forget about the grassroots level. And as an MP, I strongly believe that the Parliament has a key role to play in this process, and we should not forget this. And I would say, finally, that we have to make clear that a functional democracy cannot be with the human rights for the half of society. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for your comments, and thank you also for reminding us that actually women's rights is not only a standalone part, but also an important part of overall comprehensive good government and rule of law approach. I think that's a very important reminder to all of us. Our next speaker on my list is now our final one. This would be Ms. Hazel Brown. She is the founding member and head of the network of the NGO of Trinidad and Tobago for the Advancement of Women. She is the past Secretary General of the Commonwealth Women's Network, and Ms. Brown has conducted research and has been engaged in social development and community organization projects for many years, with a specific focus on poverty eradication and promoting gender equality. Ms. Brown is the recipient of numerous awards and commendations. Ms. Brown, now the floor is yours. Thank you very much.
Is it on?
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Your Excellencies, officials of the United UN Women, ambassadors, special invited guests. I want to thank UN Women for the opportunity to voice a civil society perspective on the issue of implementation of the MDGs in advance of CSW 58. Especially, I want to acknowledge the consistent leadership of the UN Women Caribbean Office on issues related to MDGs and gender equality. They have led a movement for building an inclusive monitoring process in the region. They have encouraged and supported a participatory approach to gender equality that champions women's and girls' voices, leadership, and rights. In this presentation, I will focus on my experience as a civil society leader in the Caribbean, some lessons learned and good practices in the Caribbean and in the Commonwealth. I will assess achievements and identify gaps and challenges, discuss ways and means to achieve to accelerate achievement of the MDGs for women and girls, and for giving priority to a comprehensive vision of gender equality, share some lessons learned, and make proposals on the way forward post-2015. I am coming ahead of several of my civil society colleagues tomorrow, and I hope to learn and share a lot from their experience and stories. And I note that many of the women who presented this morning who are in government boast of their civil society connections and credentials. But they know, as we know, that those are very different spaces, and we very often have to use very different strategies to achieve even the same goals. I will describe briefly the actions of monitoring and implementation of MDGs in the Caribbean, which have involved civil society with other stakeholders of business and professional associations, and provided an effective and credible voice of women and girls in those discussions. The UN Women Caribbean Office, as an outcome of a participatory process, issued a joint statement on gender equality and the post-2015 and SIDS agenda, developed out of a well-developed stakeholder process, which articulated 4 target areas for gender equality and women's empowerment, so that we were able to identify for our region what were our priorities in the implementation of the MDGs. And these were freedom from violence for girls and women, women's and girls' economic empowerment, gender equality in capabilities and resources, and gender equality in decision-making power in public and private institutions. That statement spoke, like I said, directly to the issue of access for capabilities and resources, for example, eradicating women's poverty, promoting decent work for women, building women's access and control over productive assets, reducing women's time burden, promoting knowledge, education, and skills for women and girls, reducing maternal mortality, ensuring women's sexual and reproductive health and reproductive rights, and several other issues. In the interest of time, I will go on. One of the goals of the Caribbean advocacy efforts was to ensure that Caribbean-specific priorities for the achievement of gender equality, including the recognition that gender inequalities are a consequence. Ooh, I lost it. All right, I'll get it. Including recognition that gender inequalities are a consequence of the unequal relations of power. We are also wanting that the global post-2015 and SIDS frameworks take into consideration the social, economic, and environmental vulnerability of SIDS and the resulting challenges of sustainable, human rights-based, and gender-responsive development. And it's very interesting that this issue of human rights as part of the agenda of post-2015 has been very clear this morning and continues to be part of what is on the table. Gender equality and women's rights in the post-2015 are the foundation for sustainable development. I also want to share some of the ideas for a new development agenda that comes from our Commonwealth perspective. In order to encourage and articulate civil society analysis of progress towards the MDGs, the usefulness of the MDG framework for civil society, the contribution of civil society to the attainment of MDGs, the issues for the post-2015 agenda consider a series of national reports documented the outputs of a 2-stage process. This project was undertaken as part of a program of the UN Millennium Campaign, which supported country-level research by civil society organizations. Civil society groups in the Commonwealth recognize the great potential to improve global development effectiveness. All right. While the consultations naturally brought to light a diversity of views both within and between countries in the Commonwealth, when viewed as a whole, remarkable areas of consensus emerged. The consultations revealed deep dissatisfaction with the extent of civil society's opportunities to engage with the MDGs at the national level. While some progress is acknowledged unevenly across different countries, on the whole, the consultations assess that most countries will fall short of meeting most MDG goals. An overall critic of the MDGs says that while consultations naturally brought to light a diversity of views both within and between countries, as a whole remarkable evils of consensus occurred. I just want to highlight, for example, the Trinidad and Tobago recommendations out of our own consultations. And it's a good example of the gap between civil society and the government in relation to these matters.
Just come to the conclusion.
Yeah, all right. The CSO reports that in general they have not placed much new programmatic focus on the MDGs. They tend to address MDG areas only where they overlap with existing work themes. They are more likely to refer to national development frameworks which only intersect with the MDGs to some extent. However, CSOs feel that the attention international donors give to MDGs and the work of UN Women, for example, has offered new opportunities to connect with the international conversations. Our proposal for going forward has to do with putting on the agenda a matter that has come up several times this morning, and that is of the economic empowerment of women and girls.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah. Thank you very much indeed, Madam Brown, for also giving us the voice and the perspective of civil society. That's a very important aspect. I would now open the floor for comments and further insights and expectations and contributions that speakers would be ready to make towards the CSW 58 relating to the presentations we just heard. Of course, you are encouraged also to raise additional issues that are pertinent to the topic. I will first call on a number of lead discussants, and I would then, like all of you, like ask you to limit your presentations to the minimum possible to give as many delegations or colleagues the opportunity to speak. I have this awful Swiss attitude to watching the clock all the time. This is built in our DNA, so I will be quite strict with keeping the time here, because we'll unfortunately have to stop here at 4:30, because the next panel will then start at 4:30, and we don't want to kind of infringe on the others. I have basically the first on my list would be my colleague from Qatar, Sheikha Alia Ahmed Said Al Thani, who I would like to give the floor, followed by another colleague, this time a male colleague, my colleague Jarmo from Finland. And then we will switch to a member of civil society, Mr. Mark Peters. So my colleague from Qatar, please, you have the floor first.
Thank you very much, Ambassador, and thank you to for such an excellent moderation, and also to the panelists for their excellent contributions today. Well, the subject is very important. It's too dear to our heart. It's really important to talk how a participatory approach to gender equality can raise awareness and raise the importance of the role that women can play in implementing and drafting policies that involves their day-to-day life issues and obstacles and challenges. As the panelists today indicated, active universal participation in all spheres by women and girls is key in achieving the desired goal of gender equality. Such topic is really important and is very timely. Such dialogue will contribute to the preparation for the 58th session of the Commission on Status of Women, whose priority theme next year will be implementing the MDG for women and girls, and gives us the opportunity to work to ensure a strong outcome and a result-oriented session. I'm very glad, really, to hear today, and the panelists have, raised a lot of important points, the importance of incorporating a participatory approach to gender equality, highlighting also the importance and the usefulness of social media in raising awareness of issues related to women and gender equality, stressing the importance of the full engagement of women and girls with disabilities and older women and women who belong to vulnerable situations, women living under foreign occupation. As Her Excellency Ms. Valentina put it rightly, giving really voice for the voiceless. This is an important element that we need always to stress and highlight. I wanted to give an example from my country, Qatar, and how we have used a participatory approach in dealing with matters related to women, including the accession to the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women in 2009, was a result, actually, of an extensive consultation process based on a participatory approach, which involved all national stakeholders, including women and men, to fully realize the importance of the provisions of the Convention and complemented the national legislations already in place to promote and protect human rights for women. And that process, actually, and I lived it myself in my previous capacity, how it was educational for us to take it in a step-by-step process, even though Qatar joined the CEDAW late. But I think we did the right thing because we educated ourselves in-house and we were able to convince ourselves to accede in the right time and in the right place. Another also example I would like to share with you, the preparation of the Qatari vision and strategic plan of action for our vision 2030. Women also played an important role, whether from governmental or non-governmental entities, women from the society, women civil society organization, all played a role in the drafting process, and also taking part now in the steering follow-up committee for that. I don't want to take much of your time. I would like to thank you all again, stressing also the importance of education. Before I conclude, education is a priority for achieving gender equality. We should always remember that. Women need national support to have their voice heard and increased participation in decision-making processes. It's also crucial to include policies on gender mainstreaming throughout the post-2015 agenda. And in this regard, I would like to emphasize that development policy should incorporate and encompass gender equality and the empowerment of women in shaping every aspect of the MDG and should not only be addressed through a single policy. And I thank you again.
I'm a male and struggling with technicians. Thank you very much indeed for your comments, Alia. Jarmo, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank all the panelists for their very substantive and inspiring presentations. And I would like to also thank UN Women for organizing this event today and tomorrow. And I think that the discussions in the morning and in this afternoon have been very good and substantive. At the same time, I'm once again a little bit perplexed. I keep asking myself, why do we need to be here today? Why do we have to gather together year after year to ask the same questions? How to end the violence against women? How to secure women's access to justice? How to achieve equal treatment in the labor market? How to realize the human rights that inherently belong to women? Whom do we have to convince that women's empowerment is essential for development? Basically, why year after year women are discriminated against just because of their gender, just because they are women? I think that there should be no controversy in these self-evident matters. On the same breath, I want to emphasize that as long as we have not ended gender-based violence, as long as gender equality is not fully realized, we have to come together and talk, and even more importantly, take action on these matters. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, women's participation in economic and political life is an essential element in creating a more equal and better society. It is not only a disgrace that we fail to use the whole potential of the society, it is also a major loss for any economy. It has been said that the real driver in world economy will not be any new economic power or emerging markets, but women's increased participation in economic life. As far as my own country is concerned, women are well represented in the politics in Finland, with 43% of our parliamentarists and 47% of our government ministers being female. Yet, this does not mean that the work is done. Women are still unrepresented in many fields, and in order to ensure gender balance in non-elected public bodies, our legislation requires each body to have a representation of at least 40% of both genders. This procedure has worked well, and it has increased women participation in so-called men's field, and importantly also vice versa. On gender equality, my country is trailing, especially in the private sector, where the lack of women in leadership roles and executive boards is truly, truly striking. The fact is, lack of women is not the result of lacking competence, it is a result of structural and persistent discrimination. And I guess we can see this in any country. And we need to ask whether companies really can afford not to use the resources more efficiently. And I think that the answer is no. As far as lessons learned from our own development, Finland marks very high scores in all kinds of international comparisons today. One key ingredient in this is women's empowerment. Without women's participation in the society, our good results could not be possible. Let me conclude by highlighting one example of my country's practical engagement in women's international empowerment. We have been funding and otherwise supported women's participation in planning, decision-making, and implementation in environmental issues. Through our funding, many developing countries have been able to send an additional delegate to international climate negotiations with one condition: the additional delegate needs to be a woman. This has proved to be a practical way to increase negotiation capacity, women's empowerment, and to better and a better inclusion of gender-sensitive approach in climate negotiations. And certainly we could use the same approach also when we are dealing with the post-2015 negotiations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, and I hope with what you said, Jarmo, that this will be one of the last meetings we have to make, because then equality will be achieved very soon. I have now a voice from the civil society, which is Mr. Mark Peters, who is from Men Engage. So I think you're the right man to talk now, right?
As you just said, I'm here today as a representative of the Men Engage Alliance, which, for those of you who don't know, is an international coalition of NGOs engaging men and boys in issues of gender equality. Our coalition believes that transforming governments and ingraining a sense of gender justice and gender equality into governing bodies is a critical issue. We know that the election of women to positions of power and the inclusion of women in the policymaking process at all levels serves the best interests of all society. We strongly believe that men must continue to stand side by side with women to pressure governments not only to adopt gender equitable policies, but also to follow through on commitments they've made. We share the view espoused on an earlier panel today that as we move forward, we cannot look only at developing countries when it comes to the gender equality agenda, particularly when it comes to political participation. As recently as today, the Irish Observatory on Violence Against Women issued a new call for Ireland to sign, ratify, and implement the Council of Europe Convention on Preventing and Combating Violence Against Women and Domestic Violence. Even 2 years after this 2011 convention, we still have not reached the critical number of 10 countries to ratify in order for it to come into force. So I'm left wondering, would the realities be different if Ireland ranked higher than 87th on the number of women in Parliament calculated by the Interparliamentary Union? Would we move faster on women's rights if their lower house was not almost 85% male? And I feel like the answer to that is almost certainly absolutely. It is not enough to increase the representation of women in government. We must also educate the men serving in political bodies so that they are better informed on interests outside of their own gender. As Her Excellency from Albania said earlier, these issues of women's rights can become marginalized, but it's not just the issues that can become marginalized. Women in political power can themselves become marginalized, and if we allow that to happen, the gains that we make by having them represented in the first place are going to be lost. Too often, policies in countries are crafted primarily by men and serve the best interests of the patriarchal status quo. This can create unnecessary and unwelcome barriers to women and further impede our progress towards equality. Even when policies are gender equitable, they can easily fail to be implemented if pressure is not applied from civil society. Outside of the halls of power, what stands out most to me is the relative absence of men in advocacy efforts. MenEngage believes that women should continue to take the lead, but these issues cannot be issues for women alone to address. Part of the motivation for our participation in this forum today is that we believe that men are also stakeholders on these issues, and that we have much to learn when it comes to how to best stand with women in advocacy and collective action. In the world, men play a variety of roles in women's lives, as partners, parents, siblings, and peers, as well as in the capacity of policymakers and religious and community leaders. And in those roles, it is critical for men to continue in greater numbers to step up as allies for women's rights, whether it is by submitting shadow reports to CSW, like our global co-chairing organization, Sonke Gender Justice in South Africa, did this year, or having our partners take part in effort like 16 Days of Activism. We will continue to bring the strength of our network to bear in standing up for the importance of gender equality. We thank you and women for bringing us all to get here together today and look forward to all the advancements that we will make together in the years to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed. I have now our colleague from Italy, Mr. Lambertini, on the floor. He will be the last speaker on my pre-set list. Now, of course, then the floor will be open for a number of other speakers to speak before we then have to conclude in about less than 15 minutes. Our colleague from Italy, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ambassador. And just let me join my colleagues in congratulating UN Women on organizing this forum, which is an excellent opportunity to prepare the next session of the Commission on Status of Women. In our analysis, the Commission is a key policy-making body in the UN system, and we will continue to actively contribute to its deliberations. We need strong agreed conclusion to guide us in framing of post-2015 development agenda. Turning to the theme of this panel, in development cooperation program, we feel it is important to take a participatory approach. Italian development cooperation adopted just such a method in its project to support social and economic empowerment, for instance, in Senegal and in Palestine, at the local level. This means taking a grassroots approach in which the public and private sector cooperate in the planning process with the full involvement of women organizations. Increasing the participation of women is also crucial in our analysis to UN peacekeeping and political missions. Women must be encouraged and enabled to play an active role in conflict prevention, conflict resolution, and peace-building operations. To this end, statistics on violation of women's rights should be included in the adoption and the renewal of target sanction in armed conflicts. Let me take another minute of our time to make a more general point. Participation is not given, especially for women. It must also be promoted through affirmative actions, which can take the shape of specific policy measures at international and national level. In Italy, for instance, our current government has more women ministers, including the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mrs. Emma Bonino, than any previous administration in our history. We still have a long way to go, but we are certainly moving in the right direction. Finally, let us not neglect to also champion men's voices for gender equality. Men must be at the forefront of this campaign, together with women, because gender equality is a crucial target for both of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. I have the DPR of India on my list of speakers, so I would like to recognize him and give him the floor. I don't know in which corner of the room he is, but he will certainly identify himself.
Mr. Moderator, I would like to begin by thanking UN Women for organizing the stakeholders' meeting. The meeting will, we are confident, provide useful inputs for the deliberations of the 58th session of the Commission on the Status of Women. I must also acknowledge that we have all benefited greatly from the contributions made today by their excellencies, the ministers from Malawi and Jordan, and the representatives from Thailand, Albania, and Trinidad and Tobago. Mr. Moderator, I would like to provide two examples from India or participatory approaches to gender equality. In 1992, through a constitutional amendment, India provided for 33% reservation for women in elected local bodies. This was increased to 50% in 2009. Today, we have some 1.5 million elected women's representatives who are the central actors in the work of local bodies, which pertain to health, sanitation, education, social welfare, and poverty alleviation. The other example that I would like to mention is that of the self-help group movement in India. It began as a grassroots initiative to encourage women to take up self-employment. It has been encouraged by the government of India, and there are now 6 million self-help groups with 97.4 million beneficiaries. I hope these are useful examples of participatory approaches to gender equality. In conclusion, I place on record our view about the centrality of gender equality and women's empowerment for poverty eradication. We believe that this should remain at the heart of the Sustainable Development Goals as well. However, we look on women's empowerment as a cross-cutting issue and not of a nature that should limit it to a standalone goal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. I open the floor for maybe one or two more speakers if there is a wish. If there is none, then I would hand the floor back to our panelists for just a very brief 1 minute at the most opportunity to comment. But before doing that, I just look into the room if anyone would like to take the floor. This is not the case, so I would like to go back to the panel in reverse order this time. So, Ms. Brown, would you like to make a comment?
I'd just like to comment on the issue of giving women and girls voice for change. We know that to ensure the participation of marginalized groups of women and girls, civil society, we are proposing what we are calling a ground-level approach as a response to the high-level recommendations and provide a counterpoint to those privileged circles which are proposing the changes. We are talking about a reality check. Having voice and participation in political process and decision making that determine their lives is a fundamental dimension of women and girls' human rights and critical for proposing the MDGs. We just have one proposal that came out of our Barbados consultations, and that is using as a model the UN ECLAC analysis matrix for identifying fair gender equality policies. Because one of the continuing issues is how do we measure when the gender policies work and whether they are fair. And this matrix, we think, is a good model for that. And we'd like to put that on the table.
Thank you very much indeed. Next, our colleague from Albania, please.
Yeah, I would like to emphasize three things. First is the sustainability of achievements. Very often we have seen that we achieve something in some political moments and then we go back again. So it's very important, especially for institutional mechanisms that sometimes suffer because of the political will and the budget. Second is media role that I mentioned even before. Media is a very strong power, and of course, sometimes we have to be careful because of the victimization, but still media is a very strong ally for us. And the third one, the role of the parliament. And you know why I'm insisting to the role of the parliament. It's not only a question of preparing good laws and policies, but the most important oversight and control over the executive body for the obligations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would a colleague from Thailand like to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very pleased to hear the representative from Qatar who mentioned that participatory approach should also be included in the post-2015 development agenda. And Also, would like to commend the permanent representative of Italy who mentioned about the voice of men. For Thailand, we emphasize the participatory approach right from the planning level, policy formulation to advocacy. And in terms of violence against women, that goes with the prevention, protection, and victim assistance as well. We engage the NGOs and civil societies and the role of men in those aspects as well. So very, very happy to hear those comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Madam Abu Hassan, please.
Thank you. First of all, I have 2 points. The first point is that providing services, not just policies and legislation, to facilitate challenges facing women and girls signifies the state's commitment towards gender equality. The need to have a direct relationship between the state and the woman as a citizen needs to be established in policies, but services are to facilitate challenges facing women are important in reshaping public policy issues. In our part of the world, religion, especially Islam, is extremely important in pushing the gender equality forward. Again, I emphasize the need for interpretation of principles of equality according to be compatible with human rights and realities that modern communities are facing. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And last but not least, Madam Gungwa.
Thank you, moderator. Once again, just to thank UN Women for organizing this very important stakeholders meeting. And secondly, to make an assurance that Malawi supports the UN Women standalone gender goal. And to particularly also agree with my colleagues that media is a very important tool. NGOs, civil society groupings, these are very important. And last but not least, that judging from the participation here and in line with our topic on which we were deliberating here, the participatory approach is becoming evident that it is the only way that is going to bring the results. I am looking at some 19 years ago, women met in Beijing, and it was just a women's issue. Women were talking to themselves. But now that we can even take example of what is happening right here, there's a 50-50 already here. We have men and women coming together. I find that this is the way to do it, and I thank men for coming and standing with us women. I thank you so much.
Well, I would like to thank first and foremost all the panelists here on the podium for their very insightful and, I think, inspiring presentations they made. And I would also like to thank participants in the floor for their comments. It would be kind of difficult to summarize the panel discussion of this afternoon, but I would like to try it and coming back to question asked by Jarmo, you know, from Finland, why do we come here all the time? I think what I learned as a very inspiring and positive lesson from why do we come here is the fact that the examples we heard here showed to me very clearly that what we do here in New York matters on the ground. It gives a clear momentum, it gives clear inspiration to creating national policies which are then implemented on local, regional, and national level. So the summits, the goals, what we here give as policy guidelines, they do trickle down, they do transpire on the national level. So what we do really matters. I think we have to come back and do it again. Let's do it again. And I think that's a good inspiration for the upcoming CSW meeting and also the SDGs. That's, for me, number one. Number two, I think what is important is increasing women's participation at all levels of society through affirmative action. And I just realized once again, quotas work. You know, quotas work. We have heard that several times today. It seems that this is working. 3, self-empowerment through creating appropriate policies and enabling frameworks. That is also another element I think we have to bear in mind, which is something which came out clearly of this discussion today. 4th, and that's the second to last point I would like to make, is women's participation, gender equality, is not something which has to be looked in itself only, but needs to be part of a whole-of-government approach, which includes good governance, the rule of law, democracy, and, as has been said quite rightly, the reliable deliverance of public services such as health, education, and otherwise. So it cannot be looked in isolation. And last but not least, everybody, really everybody, was agreeing that women's rights, gender equality, should be a standalone goal in the SDGs. And not only that, it should also be horizontally mainstreamed in other goals as well. So I think that's also a very important conclusion of this afternoon's panel, to which I thank you, everybody. And now it's 4:30, and as a good Swiss, I say, that's it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to Switzerland for keeping us on schedule. It's 4:30, and many thanks to the moderator, the panelists, the discussants. And I will now invite the members of the fourth and last panel today to please come to the podium. All right, please take your seats. Please take your seats, everyone, and we are getting ready for the fourth panel today. This panel is entitled Accelerating Progress in Investing in Gender Equality, Lessons Learned. I'm pleased to introduce the panel's moderator, His Excellency Mr. Stefan Tafrov, Permanent Representative of Bulgaria, who will introduce the members of the panel. The floor is yours, Mr. Ambassador.
Not all the six. Only
no, no, in Spanish, it's about Spanish.
Excellencies, honorable ministers, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome all of you to the final panel of today's program on accelerating progress in investing in gender equality, lessons learned. In this panel discussion, we want to focus on two key aspects, namely financial resources and knowledge resources, especially data. In order to achieve gender equality and empowerment of women, including the MDGs, political commitment and investment are required. This means funding from all sources and across all sectors, gender-responsive planning and budgeting, financing for specific programs and for universal service delivery. Funding for national mechanisms for gender equality and for the women's movement is critical. However, economic and financial crisis, austerity measures, cuts in public spending, etc., affect the quality and accessibility of public services and the availability of social protection. All of these have their impact on women and girls, on the achievement of the MDGs overall. A second issue we want to discuss in this panel pertains to knowledge, including high-quality sex disaggregated data in gender indicators. Such knowledge, as well as gender analysis, is needed to support effective policy making and implementation. While the need to monitor the MDGs has driven data collection efforts over the past decade and led to increased availability, the many gender equality and women's empowerment issues not included in the MDGs have been neglected in data collection efforts. Capacities of stakeholders to produce and use such knowledge and information effectively and to assure that tools and methodologies are in place to support policy making can effectively enhance progress towards gender equality. Now, with this in mind, this panel will focus on the following issues and questions. How have governments maintained and expanded investments in achieving the MDGs overall? And MDG 3 in particular, especially in the light of crisis and austerity? What types of investments have proven successful for progress in gender equality and the economy more generally? What sources of funding and what types of partnerships were critical for progress towards achieving the MDGs for women and girls? What have states done to strengthen data collection and analysis in regard to gender equality and women's empowerment? How has enhanced knowledge contributed to better policy making and resource allocation towards MDGs for women and girls? What are the challenges facing states in ensuring regular reporting on gender indicators, including availability of sex disaggregated data, especially in areas not currently covered by the MDGs? How can some of these challenges be overcome? I will ask each and every one of our panelists to make a short presentation of 7 minutes. The ambassador of Switzerland has just pointed out his Swiss nationality as, a guarantee for punctuality. I have to say that I have a Swiss watch to make sure everyone is punctual. That's to the panelists and to those that are going to take the floor. I encourage them to address one or all of the questions I have just raised. In particular, I encourage each panelist to present one concrete result or outcome that you would like to see from CSW 58, and what your contribution or commitment will be towards achieving that outcome. Now, following the presentation from the podium, I will open the floor for comments I have a small group of lead discussants on my list, and time permitting, more participants will be able to comment and contribute. At the end, I will give panelists a brief opportunity to respond to questions or comments. Now, our first panelist is Her Excellency Ms. Lorena Cruz Sanchez, President of the National Institute of Women of Mexico, In Mujeres. Before assuming the presidency of In Mujeres, she served as executive spokesperson for the State Council on Women and Social Welfare of the Government of the State of Mexico, where she focused on research, reforms to the legal framework and actions for equality between women and men, ending violence against women, and women's human rights. Now, we are eager to hear, Madam, Your Excellency, your insights on how we must invest in gender equality, especially also to enhance knowledge as of your commitment to the 58th session. Usted tiene la palabra.
Muy amable.
Va a hablar en español. Por favor.
Señor moderador, distinguidas panelistas y distinguidos panelistas, señoras y señores, en nombre de México, agradezco la invitación de la directora ejecutiva de ONU Mujeres para participar en este foro preparatorio del 58 periodo de sesiones de la CSW. Es un privilegio compartir con ustedes los logros, lecciones aprendidas y desafíos del Gobierno de México para acelerar el progreso de los objetivos del milenio y avanzar en el cumplimiento de los compromisos de derechos humanos que hemos adoptado para que la igualdad de género y el empoderamiento de las mujeres sean una realidad en los hechos, la igualdad sustantiva o de resultados. Mi país cree en el multilateralismo y reitera su compromiso para sumar esfuerzos para avanzar en el cumplimiento de los objetivos del milenio, para trabajar en la igualdad de género como eje principal y transversal en la nueva Agenda del Desarrollo Sostenible post-2015, sobre todo en preparación del 20 aniversario de la adopción de la Plataforma de Acción de Beijing. En primer lugar, quisiera destacar algunos elementos de mi país. En México somos 112 millones de habitantes, de los cuales 57 millones somos mujeres. El Instituto Nacional de las Mujeres, que presido, es la instancia rectora de la Política Nacional en Igualdad de Género. México es un país diverso, multiétnico y pluricultural, que se enorgullece de contar con 68 pueblos indígenas. Por ello, otorgamos una gran importancia a la Conferencia Mundial sobre los Pueblos Indígenas, que se celebrará en 2014 y organizaremos en nuestro país la reunión preparatoria para este gran evento. México cuenta con bases jurídicas, institucionales, programáticas y presupuestarias, así como jurisprudencia que garantizan la igualdad de derechos y oportunidades entre hombres y mujeres. Nuestra Constitución reconoce los derechos humanos que se derivan de los tratados internacionales suscritos por México, entre ellos la CEDAW. Nuestra Ley de Planeación obliga a transversalizar la igualdad de género en las políticas públicas y la Ley Federal de Presupuestos y Responsabilidad Hacendaria establece la no disminución del presupuesto destinado a la igualdad de género. Si bien el logro de la igualdad de género está más cerca que nunca, es claro que todavía tenemos retos por alcanzar, por lo que requerimos acelerar el ritmo. Por ello, para lograr un México en paz, justo e incluyente, el Plan Nacional de Desarrollo posiciona por primera vez la igualdad de género como estrategia transversal. Derivado del mismo, el Programa Nacional para la Igualdad de Oportunidades y No Discriminación contra las Mujeres, el PROIGUALDAD, es de obligatorio cumplimiento y se refuerza con el Programa Integral para Prevenir, Atender, Sancionar y Erradicar la Violencia contra las Mujeres. En este punto, quisiera señalar tres lecciones aprendidas. La igualdad de género es una política del Estado mexicano. En este marco, el INMUJERES promueve la suma de voluntad política entre el Poder Legislativo, el Judicial y el Poder Ejecutivo, así como de las organizaciones de la sociedad civil y las organizaciones de mujeres de manera particular. En segundo lugar, no es suficiente la igualdad formal o de derecho. Los Estados están obligados a hacer más, a poner todos los medios a su alcance para lograr la igualdad de género. Por ello, las estadísticas y los presupuestos públicos son fundamentales en la planeación. En tercer lugar, las políticas transversales son fundamentales para que la igualdad de género sea central en los planes de desarrollo, pero también necesitamos medidas afirmativas que permitan acelerar el ritmo. Voy a compartir brevemente tres ejemplos: el presupuesto público etiquetado, las medidas para acelerar la participación política de las mujeres y las estadísticas de género. El Estado mexicano impulsa la institucionalización de la perspectiva de género en los presupuestos públicos y a partir del año 2008, el presupuesto público cuenta con un anexo específico para acciones afirmativas para acelerar el ritmo hacia la igualdad. Este presupuesto etiquetado se triplicó entre 2008 y 2014, al pasar de 553 millones de dólares a 1.697. Cabe destacar que es el único anexo del presupuesto público que tiene un alto nivel de detalle con monitoreo trimestral de resultados. Asimismo, es de destacarse que una de las prioridades del Estado mexicano es cumplir con los objetivos del milenio, como la reducción de la mortalidad materna y el acceso universal a los derechos sexuales y reproductivos. Otras asignaciones presupuestales innovadoras son las becas para madres jóvenes y jóvenes embarazadas, cuyo objetivo es evitar la deserción escolar de las niñas, las becas específicas para impulsar la incorporación de mujeres en las carreras no tradicionales y los recursos institucionales para que esto vaya a instituciones universitarias y se puedan crear guarderías y estancias infantiles para hijas e hijos de estudiantes, entre otros. Otro ejemplo de acción afirmativa exitosa con relación a los objetivos del milenio ha sido la aplicación de cuotas para incrementar la participación de mujeres. México tiene la mayor representación parlamentaria de mujeres en su historia, 37% en la Cámara Baja y 33% en el Senado, gracias a la aplicación de las cuotas. En este año, donde estamos conmemorando el 60 aniversario del derecho del voto a las mexicanas, el presidente de México presentó una iniciativa legislativa para avanzar de la cuota a la paridad aprobada ayer por el Senado, por lo que estamos esperando que pronto demos la noticia que en México ya existe la paridad 50-50. Por otro lado, quisiera destacar la importancia de contar con estadísticas con perspectiva de género. Actualmente somos uno de los 46 países que cuentan con un organismo coordinador de las estadísticas de género. Señoras y señores, el éxito de los objetivos del milenio radica en centrar la acción de la comunidad internacional en objetivos claros y ambiciosos. A pesar de ello, es importante reconocer que persiste la desigualdad de género y la falta de participación y acceso al desarrollo de las mujeres en el mundo. La agenda de desarrollo debe basarse en una aspiración comprometida con la inclusión y con la igualdad. Por eso, México asume por convicción frente a ustedes sus responsabilidades globales. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias a su excelencia Lorena Cruz Sánchez. Speaking for very concretely on some measures taken in favor of 58 million of Mexican women, and also we know that, of course, when talking about women, the role of women of indigenous of different ethnicities of this of your country are very important also for statistics and for the gender statistic purposes. That is very important element. Our next panelist is Her Excellency Ms. Kuni Sato, Ambassador for Human Rights and Humanitarian Affairs and Director General for Press and Public Diplomacy of Japan. Ms. Sato joined the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in 1981 and has held assignments for her country in Bangkok, Washington, D.C., Brussels, and Geneva. Most recently, she served as Deputy Director General in the International Legal Affairs Bureau and Assistant Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs. We are looking forward, Your Excellency, to your views on the question of investing in gender equality. You have the floor.
Thank you, Ambassador. First, I would like to express my appreciation for giving this opportunity to share with you Japan's experiences while learning from the experiences of others. First, a little bit of MDGs. There has been progress in terms of our collective achievement of the current MDGs, but we have to say that there remain areas that require our further efforts, and those areas include women, poverty, education, and health. It is a basic policy of Japan to promote gender equality and the empowerment of women in all the relevant areas and aspects of development. Now, gender information and data. From a viewpoint of equity in development and from a viewpoint of effectiveness of projects, it is important for each project to promote, through the implementation of the project or the preparation of the project, the mainstreaming of gender equality. And it is equally important to formulate projects on the basis of accurate data, which is relevant to the area in question. Japan has drawn up and made use of JICA's country-by-country gender profiles. So far, JICA has compiled or developed a total of 80 such country-by-country gender profiles and shares these profiles in English as well as in Japanese, on its website for the use of other stakeholders. Take, for example, the case of Cambodia. In Cambodia's gender profile, you will find such information as the number of males aged over 40 is notably less than that of females, or the proportion of women-headed households is quite high, or most of these households live below poverty. So in such a case, gender equality and women's empowerment is even more important and urgent. Japan has been assisting Cambodia in its promotion of gender mainstreaming since quite some time. One of the projects there is to establish an effective mechanism for gender mainstreaming by strengthening the Ministry of Women's Affairs in information and research. The project, as well as other elements, have enabled the ministry to properly revise gender statistics and share the statistical information with other stakeholders. Related to this is capacity building. The importance of collecting and analyzing relevant statistical data goes without saying. And Japan, through JICA, and very often in collaboration with the SIAP, has been providing training in this specific area as one of the first priorities given in our official development assistance. On this occasion, since I still have some time, if I may, I would like to share with you two more items. One is about our Prime Minister's initiative. The other is about one of the items Japan is trying to promote for CSW 58 and beyond. Since I have only 1 minute, I will focus on the latter item, because Prime Minister Abe's initiative, perhaps, I hope, you've already heard or read. So about the last item I would like to discuss, that is related to disaster. A disaster could wipe out the hard-won achievements of years of development efforts in an instant. So it is important to build societies that are resilient to disasters through disaster risk reduction. Japan, throughout its history, has experienced numerous, sometimes massive disasters, including the last one of March 11, 2011. We would like to share with the rest of the world our experiences and lessons learned, as well as the various disaster reduction technologies and systems we have developed over the years. Those experiences and lessons would include how actually efforts were and have been and will still be made to mainstream gender equality and empower women. So, that women could play roles in disaster risk reduction. So this is one of the important items we would like to promote for the CSW the next time beyond. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador, for this very concrete and to the point presentation. It's very impressive how Japan really tries to integrate gender mainstreaming into its cooperation activity. You've mentioned what JICAS has been doing in helping partner countries to collect data on this, and you, I understand, 18 country profiles we can find on their website. That's quite impressive. I thank Ambassador Kunisato, and now I'm turning to Ambassador Geir Pedersen, the permanent representative of Norway to the United Nations. I have to say, someone who is very well known around as a very enthusiastic supporter of gender and women's issues in general in this organization, like his country, by the way. Mr. Pedersen previously served in different positions in the Norwegian Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Oslo and overseas. Most recently, he was Director General in the Department for the United Nations, Peace and Humanitarian Affairs. He served also at the United Nations, where he was the Secretary General, Special Personal Representative and Special Coordinator for Lebanon, as well as Director of Asia and Pacific Division in the Department of Political Affairs. Geir, you have the floor.
Thank you, Stefan, and good to see you all, ladies and gentlemen. Gender equality is, of course, a goal in itself as well as it is a right. But it is also smart economics. At the beginning of last century, Norway was among the poorest countries in Europe. It was the economic crisis in the 1930s that triggered increased cooperation and collective solutions, of which women empowerment and gender equality was a major part. Investment in gender equality accelerates development and economic growth, and we speak from experience. Norwegian women participation in the workforce has increased from 50% in the 1970s up to 75% today. This is 16% more than the average of the industrialized countries in the OECD. Why is this important? It is important because if Norwegian women's participation equaled the average of the OECD countries, we would indeed have lost values equivalent to the Norwegian oil fund. And ladies and gentlemen, that's a lot of money. It's actually $800 billion, and we are still counting. So we know the importance of women being active in the labor force. The advancements that we have made in Norway are the results of political will, a strong civil society, and indeed long-term investments. Let me emphasize this, that women's empowerment and gender equality does not happen by itself. It needs political will, it needs political change. In the 1970s, women's freedom to work after having children was in Norway very limited. Over the next couple of decades, welfare schemes were established that enabled women to combine work and care for children. These reforms quickly gained broad political support and happened parallel to what has been called the equality revolution in higher education. Among the advances that enable women to have it all, let me mention or highlight 4 points. We have 1 year of parental leave, where some weeks are reserved for the father. We have the right of leave of absence when children are sick. That's the second point. And third, we have reduced work hours for breastfeeding. And fourth, full coverage of subsidized daycare and preschools, as well as care for elderly. A quota law that requires companies to have at least 40% women on their boards has strengthened women's participation in the private sector and improved the performance of Norwegian companies. As we see it, there is a strong correlation between a country's gender gap and its national competitiveness, income, and development. In healthcare and education internationally, the gap is closing. However, the gap between women and men in terms of economic participation and political empowerment remains wide. There is a long way to go before the gender gap is closed worldwide. We, of course, take this into account when it comes to our development cooperation. Therefore, gender equality continues to be among our top priorities. Good intentions must be followed up with financial support. In addition to funding targeted programs, we also promote gender mainstreaming in our development cooperation and use a gender marker to track our funding in this respect. In several instances, we require partners to report on the effect that the project has on gender equality. We also believe there is a clear link between gender equality and the eradication of poverty. Therefore, women must be at the center of accelerating the achievements of the Millennium Development Goals. The current goals do not effectively address the underlying structural causes of gender inequality. Therefore, we believe that we need a standalone goal on gender equality in the post-2015 framework. Gender equality also needs to be integrated into the targets and all indicators for all the goals in the new development framework. Girls' education is, of course, also an important driver of other development goals, particularly girls' secondary education. Equal access to education for girls will be a key goal in our development policy when we are moving forward. By concluding, like the other Nordic countries, Norway has taken deliberate steps to promote gender equality. Equal opportunity has been furthered by means of substantial public investment, and the investments have paid off. Giving everyone equal opportunities results in an efficiency gain because more people work and pay taxes, and because tasks are carried out by the best qualified people, regardless of gender, age, family situation, or social status. Thank you.
Thank you, Gare, for your extremely focused and well-structured statement. So the lesson is women's empowerment makes a nation richer, if I may summarize it. And second, of course, not all problems have been solved in your country. I understand there is no an ideal place in the world, but also congratulations for structuring your foreign cooperation, your cooperation also on women's empowerment. I think that's very, very commendable. Now I'm turning now to our next panelist, who is Ms. Saida Hashim, who serves as the Director of the Manpower and Social Statistics Division in the Department of Statistics of Malaysia. She has worked extensively on gender statistics and is responsible for integrating a gender perspective into the collection and analysis of official statistics in Malaysia. We are looking forward to your contribution on the question of data collection and gender statistics and indicators. Evidently, you are an expert in this field. You have the floor.
Thank you, esteemed moderator. Good afternoon, distinguished panelists, excellencies, and fellow participants, and also assalamu alaikum. Okay, now it's my turn to talk about data and statistics, a subject often described as dull and dry. But without these dry and dull information, we wouldn't be able to monitor, we wouldn't be able to measure the achievement of the MDGs. And that is why since this morning, we've heard distinguished participants and also presenters talk about some form of statistics, like a percentage of women in the population, about gender gaps, about percentage of women in decision-making positions. And we talk about some millions spent to assist refugees, and in turn, lesser allocations being given for women courses. Yeah? So where would we be without these statistics? All right, now, to create meaningful indicators in order to enhance evidence-based policies. I would like to stress on that, evidence-based policies. And reliable statistics are needed, and at these times of economic challenges, the how and the how much of data collection is very much being questioned. Yeah. So before I go further into the how and the how much, I would like to share Malaysia's experience in collecting statistics with focusing on the gender statistics. Yeah. Now, the responsibility of collecting, compiling, and disseminating social statistics in the Department of Statistics in Malaysia lies on the shoulders of the Manpower and Social Statistics Division. Now, whilst the Manpower section is responsible for collecting statistics on primary data, particularly on the employment, on employability, on migration, the Social Statistics Division is responsible for compiling the statistics pertaining to a whole range of social issues, such as educate population, housing, health, education, welfare, and also public safety. Now, these information are collected from various line agencies, ministries, and also other agencies who are in the know of the subjects that they are collecting. So the decision to rely on secondary statistics is to avoid, number one, duplication of task. Why should we do something? Why should we collect the same information when someone else who is well-versed in the subject is already collecting it? Yeah, to avoid duplication of tasks. Number two is to capitalize on existing data.
And last but not least, is to acknowledge the expertise of these line agencies with regards to the data that they have collected. So with the gradually, as the scope of secondary statistics are broadened to encompass the MDGs, to encompass gender statistics, and also to encompass goal 4 of the education for all, which is under UNESCO, the social statistics division in the Department of Statistics, we embarked on what we call the interagency planning group. I know that UN Women has their interagency expert group on gender statistics. Now, we work very hard to get the interagency group to come together, and the agencies that make up the IAPG are basically the suppliers, the providers, the providers of the statistics that we need. Yeah, and what do we do when we meet them? First, we have to explain to them why the areas, why the statistics that we are requesting from them has already increased, has already broadened, and when they assist the Department of Statistics in providing the data, it is also, to a certain extent, to show the quality of the data that they are providing. So the question of reliability, the question of quality comes in. And at the same time, they also provide, you know, they also provide the metadata in showing us how the statistics that they compiled are being calculated. Okay, next. To the issue of to the questions that has been raised by you. Oh, by the way, I really would like to thank UN Women for giving the acknowledgement to statisticians who has always been the backroom boys, and in supporting the policy makers in decision making. Yeah, thank you, UN Women. Okay, now to the questions of what do we do in times of crisis. And when there are austerity drives, what do we do in terms of partnerships? Now, the solution is, I have three key words. One is to collaborate. The other one is to innovate. And last but not least is do not duplicate. So these are things which is meant to be a win-win situation, okay? A win-win situation, and also in the context of smart partnership. What we have done... Gosh, okay. What we have done is, in terms of smart partnership, we are already working very closely with UNICEF in terms of creating a database to use the UNICEF free database under the name of DevInfo to come up with various databases pertaining to MDGs, ASEAN MDGs, and now we have put it on board the gender statistics. Yeah, and efforts are underway with the Ministry of Education to link the database for education for all on board the Malaysia Info. Next, in terms of strengthening data collection and analysis, first is we take efforts to improve the tools in data collection. We improve the questionnaire so that when we do data collection, especially in terms of employment, now, there are lots of ways that women can participate in the labour market, and one of the most popular things is to sell things online. So if these things are not being put in the questionnaire, the enumerators might forget to ask, okay? So strengthening the tool. And we're talking about gender gaps and all the other indicators. This morning, the gentleman from... the representative from the Baha'i community mentioned about community buying in. But for the community to buy in, these indicators has got to be explained in the layman's term so that once it is easily understood by the layman, by the community, then only there would be buying in. With that, thank you.
Thank you so much for this very insightful presentation of what your country has been doing in this very important field. And I think that what we heard very well when you describe your approach is collaborate, innovate, don't duplicate, especially in times of fiscal and other austerity. That's very important. I think that could be useful for the countries as well. I thank you, and thank you very much indeed. Our final panelist is Ms. Cindy Clark, who is the Acting Co-Executive Director for the Association for Women's Rights in Development and International Feminist Membership Organization committed to achieving gender equality, sustainable development, and women's human rights. As Director of Programs, she was the lead researcher on her organization's Where is the Money for Women's Rights initiative from its inception. I hope that your work will help us better understand where the gaps are. You have the floor, Ms. Clark.
Thank you very much. I'm going to follow on that enthusiastic presentation around statistics and data with a few graphs, which is why you have a PowerPoint in front of you. Thank you very much to UN Women for organizing this event and for the invitation to participate. And I just want to express my pleasure and privilege to be on the panel with the distinguished panelists. As was mentioned, AWD for over 8 years now has been doing research into funding trends for women's rights organizations, and gender equality. So I'd like to speak a little bit to an overview of some of the funding trends that we're seeing, included in that a bit about the state of funding for women's organizations, as well as some of the opportunities and limitations of what we also hear a lot about in terms of new funding sources for women and girls. I want to offer some lessons learned and insights from the experience of the Dutch MDG3 fund that was established in 2008, and I also want to offer a few recommendations for CSW 58. After official development assistance reached record highs in 2010, by 2011, ODA as a share of gross national income began to fall, and that fall continued in 2012. So we're seeing a decline in overall levels of official development assistance. But when we look at what's happening in terms of aid and support of gender equality and women's empowerment, and here I want to pause and give thanks to our colleagues at the OECD DAC and GenderNet for the hard work that they do in compiling this information and statistics, you can see on the top line that in dollar amounts, what's being tracked as aid for gender equality and women's rights and women's empowerment, has been increasing, although the percentage of this aid as a part of the total has fluctuated. It's now on a high of 35%, but it began in 2002 at 27%. So it's still not, I would say, at the level of increase that we might like to see. And if we want to dig into these numbers in a bit more detail, looking at the statistics from 2010 and 2011, there was a total of $20.5 billion in gender equality-focused aid. Of that, 84% was what we would call mainstreamed. So it was efforts that said they had gender equality as a significant objective. It might be roads that were counted because women could walk on them or use them, as opposed to just 16% of those funds that were targeted to gender equality and women's empowerment as a principal objective. So we see here that the majority of this is mainstream support. A quick glimpse in terms of how this support is divided over different sectors. These were the top six. So the highest contributions around government and civil society, education, water and sanitation, health, agriculture, and rural development were also prominent. Missing here is more attention to sexual and reproductive health and activities for women's economic empowerment that were lower in terms of the sectoral division of this aid. One of the things that we think very strongly is that support to women's organizations is a critical ingredient for successful gender equality investments. And we actually have some information and tools to know how much official development assistance is targeting women's equality organizations and institutions. What you see in this picture is that the overall funding for all women's organizations and institutions, this includes the national machineries, the women's ministries, has actually decreased between 2008 and 2011. But within that, the amount that's going to civil society women's organizations has increased significantly. So now the funding that's reaching civil society groups is about 64% of the total. So while that's a welcome increase, I think we don't want to see it coming at the expense of the other important women's institutions and entities that are needed to advance gender equality goals. Just to name here that in terms of the increases for support for women's organizations, the Netherlands, Norway, Spain, Sweden, and the UK all showed significant increases between 2008 and 2011 as some of the most prominent supporters. So while this might be an encouraging picture for how we would perceive support reaching women's organizations working on gender equality issues, AWID has regularly done a global survey. The last one was done in 2011. We received more than 1,100 responses from 140 countries, and it actually paints a not so encouraging picture. The median annual income of the organizations that participated in this survey was just over $20,000, which we think is far too low to achieve the objectives that these groups have. At the same time, it's double what it was in 2005. So it's moving in the right direction, but certainly not where we would like to see it. And then, again, I want to come back to this question of when we talk about investment for women and girls, a lot of what we hear is, well, what about the new actors, the corporate sector actors out there, corporate foundations? There's a lot of talk about investing in women and girls in the media. What's happening here? AWID recently completed some new research where we looked at 170 different initiatives that bring together these kinds of new partners who say they're interested in supporting women and girls. Looking at those 170 initiatives, we saw $14.6 billion committed. Now, these are commitments, not necessarily delivered yet, but clearly a very sizable chunk of resources. We have much more detailed analysis that would be available in the research report, but I just wanted to share kind of the nature that this support is taking. 44% of these initiatives are using training and technical assistance. So it's direct delivery of support through training and technical assistance. 31% are using in-kind services and contributions. 28% are resourcing and launching their own initiatives. So they're not necessarily reaching existing partners, but they are doing their own thing. And then you can see the other statistics there. I want to speak very briefly to what we have learned about what we think works for investments in gender equality from the Dutch MDG3 fund. We did some research looking into an aggregate analysis. AWID was one of the grantees, and we worked with other grantees to analyze the impacts of that fund, which have been very significant in terms of the scope and reach that it has had. It was also quite significant because, as was mentioned in the panel earlier, it didn't just focus on formal laws and policies and access to resources, but was also really targeting social norms and beliefs, and that was really key to its impact. Just to highlight some of the key characteristics that were important, significant size and duration of funding was mentioned by the grantees as key in allowing them to expand the scope and the reach of the work that they were doing. It provided flexible core support, so when the context shifted, the actions could shift accordingly, and also it allowed groups to invest in their organizational strengthening. It supported a range of work relating to violence against women, economic empowerment, and political participation. And most groups were able to then weave that together, which they felt made their programs much stronger. It provided focused support for women's rights organizations and funds, and therefore, through re-granting, they were able to reach many different levels. And it was open to influence and negotiation with grantees and other stakeholders. So we think these experiences in the current landscape, as the colleague from Finland commented in the last panel, why are we here year after year? And what I bring as recommendations are not rocket science, and they're not new, because they come from the expert group report from September 2007 in preparation for the 2008 CSW. We think we still need to scale up the share of ODA for gender equality and women's empowerment. we could start with 20% by 2015, and that mainstream is not enough. And second, it's urgent to advance mechanisms to assess performance results and accountability. So the commitments to funding are not sufficient, but really having the policies in place, clear targets and indicators, and tracking mechanisms. And AWID is pleased to be collaborating with Social Watch and UN Women in a funder scorecard that we hope can contribute to that end. Thank you.
Thank you very much for these fascinating presentations of the gender equality focused aid, and you're a source of excellent information and very insightful information. This was the last panelist on my list, and now I'm opening the floor for comments and further insights and expectations, also questions to the panelists. I will first call on lead discussants, and would like to ask you to limit your comments to 3 to 5 minutes so that we are able to hear as many speakers as possible. And I'm turning first to the permanent representative of the European Union, Ambassador May Harding. Thomas, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for giving the floor to the European Union. And I would also like to thank all panelists for presentations that we also found very insightful and very helpful. We appreciate the opportunity to share with colleagues the experiences and lessons learned in advancing the MDGs for women and girls. We also would like to underline the important role played by the Commission on the status of women in policy discussions on promoting gender equality, and the important contribution made by the Commission's main outcome, the agreed conclusions. The European Union development policy includes gender equality as a fundamental value and priority. The EU consensus on development, dating back to 2005, recognized gender equality as a goal in its own right, and it identifies it as one of the 5 essential principles of development cooperation. In 2008, this was followed by the adoption of an agenda for action on MDGs to step up efforts to achieve the MDG targets by 2015, which again contained a strong focus on gender equality. In connection with the 2010 MDG Review Summit, the European Union reaffirmed its strong commitment to gender equality as a human right and a core value of the European Union's development policy. It also stated that gender equality, women's political and economic empowerment, and women's enjoyment of human rights are essential for poverty reduction and sustainable development. While noticeable advances have been made globally on the MDGs to address the remaining challenges, the European Union created a new MDG initiative that we announced in 2010, making available needs-based and performance-based funding at a level of 1 billion euro. 700 million of this amount targets the most off-track MDGs: hunger, maternal health, child mortality, water and sanitation. The MDG initiative funds 70 projects in 46 countries. The gender commitments of the EU development policy were further spelled out in the EU Plan of Action on Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment for the period 2010-15, which aims at reinforcing EU coordination on gender equality policies in development cooperation. The plan aims to ensure adequate human and financial resources for gender equality and mainstreaming gender equality in our projects. The plan is also aimed at strengthening European Union support to partner countries in their efforts to achieve the Millennium Development Goals, in particular MDGs 3 and MDG 5. On MDG 3, on gender equality and women's empowerment, the various EU programs support women's political participation, for example, facilitating their contribution to peace and state-building processes. They also help improve the economic and social status of women by promoting equal rights for women and men, for instance, inheritance and property rights. On MDG 5, on improving maternal health, the European Union has worked with governments to support the development and implementation of national health policies and strategies. The European Union continues to give special attention to access for girls to education, helping some 300,000 female students enroll in secondary education during the past 10 years. In addition, some 13,000 female higher education students have taken part in our mobility schemes. And we have also supported the enrollment of around 85,000 female students in secondary education in 10 countries in sub-Saharan Africa between 2005 and 2010. Let me also add that when it comes to statistical data, high quality and reliable sex disaggregated data remain crucial for planning, monitoring, and evaluating sound, efficient, and effective gender equality policies, as well as in discussions related to the achievement of the MDGs. Throughout the years, the EU has developed through its Central Statistical Office, Eurostat, and in cooperation with national statistical offices, a broad range of statistics and data disaggregated by gender, which are comparable between our member states. And clearly, this is a policy that we will continue to follow very actively. Let me also note that the European Union will continue to closely cooperate with UN Women, including through the implementation of a joint memorandum of understanding that we signed in 2012. We thank once again all participants, and more specifically the panelists, for their input, and stand ready to engage in constructive discussions in the framework of the Commission on the Status of Women. Thank you very much.
I thank you, Mr. Ambassador, for your very, very thorough presentation of the EU's contribution. Now I'm turning to the permanent representative of the Netherlands, a country that has just been quoted as among the champions in terms of gender equality focused ODA. So I'm sure you, Carl, you have a lot to share with us, and we are listening with interest. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your personal leadership and the expert way of moderating this session. And also thanks to UN Women for organizing this second stakeholders forum, and we believe that's an excellent way to prepare for CSW 2014. And of course, I would like to thank our panelists for sharing their insights, and I just jotted down the key things I picked up from what you're saying. Ambassador Sato, thank you for the example of gender profiles in Japan. That was very useful. President Cruz Sanchez, the key issue you stressed was the need of having sufficient political will. Ambassador Pedersen, of course, you provided background of the impressive Norwegian numbers on female participation in the labor force and how that was caused. Director Hashim, the importance of crucial and correct statistics you underlined cannot be underestimated. And of course, there's one person I really would like to thank, Director Cindy Clark, for underlining key lessons from the Dutch MDG 3 fund, which basically means that I can throw away half of my speech. I have three key issues I would like to highlight, structured according to the agenda of my country here at the UN, which is peace, justice, and development. It's the issues of 1325, rule of law, and development issues. First, when it comes to 1325, my government supports women, peace, and security agenda through our second Dutch National Action Plan. This action plan is supported by a partnership of several government ministries, research institutions, and over 30 civil society organizations. Let me give you one example. In the MENA region, we support the Women in the Frontline program, and that program enables women's organizations to strengthen their capacity with tailor-made assistance, and we channel that through HIVOS and PricewaterhouseCoopers. Secondly, we support a gender-sensitive approach to rule of law and transitional justice in conflict and post-conflict situations. Women and girls should have equal access to fair and transparent services of justice, and they should be able to influence justice policies and institutions in their country. An example is our support to the court system in Rwanda, where 17,000 judges have been trained in handling cases of sexual violence. And personally speaking, I'm really proud of that. Thirdly, when it comes to development, we believe gender equality and women's empowerment are key issue for the whole development agenda. Over more than two decades since Cairo and Beijing and before, achieving gender equality and sexual and reproductive health and rights are priorities in my government's development cooperation programs. We've established the MDG 3 fund. I will not elaborate on that one. In the meantime, we've also set up the FLOW program, the Funding Leadership Opportunities for Women. And these programs have made a difference for many women's organizations and women around the world. Character is demand-driven, flexibility to respond, and an exchange of information and lessons learned. And that has proven to be key ingredients for successful and lasting support. Finally, Mr. Chair, we do agree with UN Women and many member states that gender equality should be addressed as both as a separate goal as well as should be mainstreamed in the goals of the post-2015 agenda. This is an ambitious agenda, and the use of gender disaggregated data and gender indicators is key for effective mainstreaming. We look forward to the CSW next year, and that will help member states, the UN organizations, civil society organizations, and all other stakeholders to contribute to gender equality and women's empowerment in the most creative, effective, and sustainable ways. And we look forward to work closely with all of our partners to realize our common and ambitious agenda. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador. I was very, very impressed by what you said about what the Netherlands has been doing in Rwanda in training judges in dealing with sexual violence against women. This is a challenging task for any judiciary and per se. So this is something which is, I think, very precious, and I hope it can be generalized around the world. Exchange of experience in this field seems to me essential. Now, are there other comments or questions or to the panelists from the floor? Maybe we were, I was too strict with them, and maybe we can use this opportunity to give them the floor back in to Ms. Clark, and so that I didn't allow you to say everything you wanted to say, and also you can react to these two presentations as well. So Ms. Clark and in reverse order, the rest of the panelists. You have the floor.
Thank you. I got through most of what I wanted to say. I appreciate the comments at the end. I think I very much agree with what's been expressed by in both comments. One of the things that we emphasize is that it's important to combine, as I think has already been said here today, both mainstreamed approaches, targeted specific approaches, as well as specific support for relevant women's organizations and other members of civil society to be able to engage and influence in these processes at multiple levels. The one point that I will go back to from my presentation that I skipped over very briefly comes back to the question of the new actors, because I just want to emphasize that I think the role of both donor governments and state governments remains critical in development efforts. That while it's important that private sector actors are looking at how to expand their role in development, we have many questions around how and where we best find common cause. And also I think it's going to be a steep learning curve to see how best we collaborate in development initiatives. So I just can't emphasize enough the importance of continuing strong government support for gender equality. Thank you.
So much. Now can I ask Ms. Saida Hashim to react or to elaborate?
Okay, thank you. I think as mentioned by Ms. Madam Nicole of CIDOL this morning, that databases are important tools in decision making. So if you have a good database that is very, very informative, then there is a need to market the products, and this is one of the efforts towards avoiding duplication. Yeah? Because I know every line agency would like to declare that they have their own database on this and that. Okay. And another thing is that there has to be a continuous capacity building among the statistical staff and also among the line agencies that compile statistics pertaining to MDG. And one of the aspects that has to be built up upon is the interpretation of the indicators that are being collected. So once there is an understanding of what you collect and why you do it, then there would there would be a sort of a passion to understand, yeah, to understand and to share what you have compiled. And last but not least, there has to be a strengthening in the methods of data collection, be it primary or secondary data, so that reliable statistics can be produced. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I turn now to Her Excellency Lorena Cruz Sanchez?
El próximo periodo de sesiones de la Comisión CCW será un espacio fundamental para establecer las estrategias que nos permitan avanzar en el cumplimiento de los compromisos que hemos adoptado para que la igualdad y el empoderamiento de la mujer sean una realidad. Nos sentimos alentados por los resultados alcanzados en el pasado periodo de sesiones de la Comisión, en donde fue posible lograr acuerdos muy importantes para combatir la violencia contra la mujer, y trabajaremos desde ahora para que la próxima sesión de la Comisión tenga un resultado positivo. Requerimos un mayor compromiso con el empoderamiento económico de las mujeres. Jamás vamos a romper el círculo de la violencia si una mujer no es empoderada y es autosuficiente. Es preciso impulsar el crecimiento del empleo para las mujeres, pero también, y esto es una prioridad de nuestro gobierno, Gobierno de México, políticas públicas de cuidado que reparen la invisibilidad y exceso del trabajo no remunerado y tiempo que dedican de manera inequitativa a las mujeres y que garanticen el cuidado como un activo público con responsabilidad central en el Estado. Es preciso escuchar a las mujeres y a sus organizaciones. Por ello, nos complace anunciar que México será sede de la Consulta Regional de América Latina y el Caribe previo al 58 periodo de sesiones de la CCW. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. And now I give the floor to Ambassador Kunisato.
Yes.
If I may, I will just add that I mentioned briefly about, disaster. And Japan is planning to resubmit a follow-up resolution on gender equality and the empowerment of women in natural disasters at the next session of CSW. Another element I would like to add is that in this context, let me just refer to the third World Conference on Disaster Risk Reduction that is to be held in the city of Sendai in March 2015. And I would like to invite cooperation and participation to this conference well in advance now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador. And now I give the floor to Ambassador Pedersen. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Stefan. I think, my lesson from having the pleasure of being at the panel here today is that it's about one thing. It's about empowerment of women. And it's how we can help in different capacities to contribute to that empowerment. And the second is we need to get our policies right. We have been discussing a little bit about donor activities. I found it extremely interesting that only 3.2 billion is going to gender-related issue as a principal object, which I found interesting. And I think we have to look into that and see if we can do something more when it comes to targeted contributions. But then, my final word, this is about empowerment of women and about policies in the countries themselves. We as donors can't change realities on the ground. It has to be the people themselves. And we know from experience that change is possible and it can be done and it's happening every day. So continue the good work.
Thank you. Thank you, Gerard, for this very good for summing up in a way this panel, and from what I understand, yes, change is possible, but political will is of essence. At this stage, I would like to ask Ms. John Hendrew, Assistant Secretary General and Deputy Executive Director of UN Women, to make closing comments. You have the floor, Assistant Secretary General.
Thank you very much, Ambassador, Mr. Moderator, Excellencies, colleagues.
On behalf of UN Women, I'd like to sincerely thank all of our speakers and moderators and panelists, as well as all participants, for what was a really engaging and very rich rich discussion here today. I think we heard some very consistent themes in our discussion, so I'd like to just maybe give a very brief flavor of this in terms of my closing comments. Across several of the panels, I think there was a very strong and consistent support for a standalone goal on gender equality, women's rights, women's empowerment, and also equally very strong support for the integration of gender equality across all the goals, across the whole framework, especially, I think, in areas of sustainability and global partnership. So in short, I think we heard a very strong call for women and girls to really be at the center, to really be at the heart of the next development agenda. While various speakers, I think, acknowledge the importance of the MDGs for galvanizing attention and resources and policy focus, including through the current standalone goal MDG 3, I think there is also broad recognition that we have not made the progress for women and girls that we expected to see in the implementation of the MDGs. I think there also was a broad awareness and recognition that the MDGs have not addressed some of the structural drivers of gender inequality, such as violence against women and girls, unpaid care work, but also some of the core issues such as sexual and reproductive health and rights. While the focus of some of the interventions today was very much on how do we accelerate the current efforts, we have just over 750 days left, but it's clear that there are a lot of significant challenges to implementation that remain. These include the gap between having the right laws and policies in place, but also effectively implementing them. Other key challenges, I think, that we heard today in terms of implementation include the impact of the broader macroeconomic environment on gender equality, especially in the context of recent crisis and austerity policies and measures being taken, the persistence of conflicts, and also climate change. All of these are seen, I think, as very much as key barriers to progress. In addition, we heard about weak institutions and governance and how important accountability for gender equality and accountability systems are to really see progress for women and girls. I think we also heard that if we were to implement the MDGs and other policies effectively, we need to use all the tools and instruments we have, so including the Millennium Declaration, CEDAW, the Beijing Platform for Action, all through a rights-based approach. I think we also heard a number of colleagues say today that we really need to leverage the 20th anniversary, the commemoration of the Beijing Platform of Action to really help us accelerate progress on the MDGs. I think we also heard that laws and policies are clearly not enough. We also need grassroots support and community buy-in, including the full engagement of men and boys to ensure the effective implementation and to assume their responsibility. Clearly, participation of women and girls is critical at all levels to shape and influence in policies. And we also heard from some countries the importance of temporary special measures to that effect. But I think we also heard that gender mainstreaming across sectors is really critical to drive change. But this means looking beyond sometimes the usual gender equality issues, the issues like transportation and fossil fuels, again, climate change and water and sanitation. I think it was also highlighted that effective implementation of MDGs for women and girls requires an effective enabling environment for gender equality. This means we need strong political will, but we also need to have in place gender-responsive institutions, strong governance and accountability systems, and macroeconomic policies that are more aligned with rights, and full implementation of CEDAW and all of its obligations and commitments. I think we also heard very much in terms of the importance of data, ensuring high quality and regularly updated data on gender equality is critical. And then going forward, it's so important that we, for the whole entire post-2015 agenda, the data be disaggregated by sex, by age, by income level, by social group, disability, and so on. There was also a clear message, I think, on the importance of engaging all different stakeholders. Civil society, in particular, is also a key partner, not only in terms of implementing, but also in terms of, importantly, monitoring progress in MDG implementation. So it's very critical to ensure that the specific voices of specific groups of women, such as rural women or women living with disabilities, but also of girls, are heard and heard consistently. I think colleagues also stress the importance of robust institutions that can really transform legal and policy advances into what we all strive for, which is really tangible change for women and girls. Participation of women and women's organizations in implementing and monitoring the MDGs is fundamental, as is closing the gender gap across the board. But I think we heard particularly eloquently in terms of women's economic empowerment. And as we heard, clear and targeted empowerment of women economically makes a nation and a society much richer. Finally, and critically, as we just heard, adequate and sustained resourcing is absolutely fundamental to accelerate progress towards the MDGs for women and girls. While the MDGs more broadly undoubtedly galvanized support and garnered and helped raise resources broadly, expansion on gender equality, as we very clearly seen on the screen, and on sectors that are extremely relevant for achieving the MDGs from a gender perspective is stagnating or even falling in several countries as a result of successive economic crises and associated austerity measures. So really now is the time to reverse this significant and great underinvestment in gender equality and women's empowerment if you want to see real progress in achieving the MDGs and ensuring that the development gains, but also the achievement of rights, are equally enjoyed by women and girls. So I think we heard that change is very possible, political will is fundamental, and underlying it all is really moving towards true gender equality, achieving women's rights and empowerment of women. So again, on behalf of you and women, a huge thank you to all of you and all the speakers and panelists and moderators, but to all of you for your very active engagement. And we really look forward to taking this discussion further forward tomorrow. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Assistant Secretary General, for your kind words to the panelists and the participants in this discussion. And thank you, by the way, for mentioning the 10th anniversary of the Beijing, and as you know, the Third Committee recently adopted a text which was adopted as a chair's text, reflecting the general consensus among the UN membership on this very important matter. I'd like to thank, on my behalf, all of you for your contributions, and I'm closing this meeting.